Okay, we're back so soon again with another episode of More From Sam. Hello, Sam.
Hey, good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you as well. Before we begin, I just want to run through a little housekeeping. I want to apologize to all those in Dallas and Austin this week for having to postpone our shows due to a family medical emergency. We have rescheduled those shows for May 20th in Dallas and May 21st in Austin. We are sorry for any inconvenience this may have caused, but in time, I'm sure Sam will share more. I don't know, Sam, if you want to say anything quickly now or we should just move on.
Yeah, it's this is the thing, as you know, that I really hate about live events. They're like the one thing that if your life goes haywire, it's really difficult to cancel or reschedule. I mean, I've been to events, you know, my own events where people have come up and said, I mean, I think there was one in Vancouver or Toronto, and a couple came up and said they had traveled from Australia for the event. And obviously, that's just amazing to hear and wonderful. But I think of those people on the rare occasion that an event has to be rescheduled or canceled, because I know there are people who are just coming out of a hotel expecting to go to an event in Dallas, and they're getting their email or not seeing their email that it was rescheduled. So that just gives me serious brain damage, and it was not lightly that we canceled this, but I've got a family member who had to go in the hospital yesterday, and I don't want to get into private details, but it's a big deal, and it's stable at the moment, but it's very good that I'm in town. So
okay, well, thank you for sharing that. We are still coming to Portland and Vancouver in March, and then Toronto, DC, and New York City as well in May. If you want to get tickets, you can find all that information at samharris.org. Also, we talked about the Waking Up app last week getting featured in the Apple Store. Things continue to heat up there. Again, thanks in part from that Apple promotion. But I make this joke often. I think this podcast and media in general makes everyone crazy. And then we sell the app that offers the cure. We're kind of like the mafia over here. But seriously, if you're listening to this podcast and you feel unsettled anyway, you'd like to learn how to fix that, go to the App Store and you can download the Waking Up app. And if you can't afford it, you can get a free account. If you can pay, please do that. But if you can't, don't worry about it. You can take it for free. Okay, with all that out of the way, we've been saying the Epstein files were going to be a nothing burger, and it appears we may have gotten that wrong. Where do you want to start, Sam?
It turns out that I'm in them, which I was not anticipating. So we should talk about that.
Well, we don't need to start there. We can come back to that unless you want to start there.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess we're going to make light of this because, you know, it's kind of funny the way I'm in them. But I don't want there to be any confusion around, you know, how I perceive the larger issue here. I mean, I'm not, obviously nothing I'm about to say is going to make light of what a monster Epstein was and how good it is that, I mean, in my view, at least, that the files are coming out. And, obviously anyone who participated with his, in his actual crimes deserves to be prosecuted and all of that. And I think we're probably going to differentiate the degrees of culpability that we perceive insofar as we've seen what has been released in this recent tranche. Because I think there's a fair amount of confusion around just how implicated people are. But yeah, obviously, the man himself was awful and he did awful things. And there are people who enabled those things or participated in the abuse and trafficking of young girls. And it's just, we want nothing but justice for those people, et cetera. And I also don't mean to make light of the people who are like me in these files in a way that is peripheral to one or another degree. And it may be properly fucking up their lives and reputations because people are not disposed to differentiate the degrees of culpability, et cetera. So, I'm sure I know many, many people who are mentioned in these files because now I see how the network is kind of strung together based on these email chains. And, some of them might really be sweating it out for no real reason, except they have institutions that may want to fire them as a result of, some weird implication that may be meaningless, et cetera. So I don't mean to make light of any of that, but I'm going to make light of my own situation because I got a big laugh out of it. I do think it's a little too soon to vindicate the proper conspiracy theorists, the Pizzagaters, the QAnon lunatics, who really are lunatics. I mean, when you look at the rest of what they have claimed is true, I mean, even if the worst allegations about Epstein or the worst assumptions about Epstein and his network are true, this does not redeem Pizzagate or QAnon. I mean, those people are just mad. But I think we should be slow to imagine that there are a ton of guys out there who want to have sex with 13-year-olds. from what I've seen, I mean, and I don't even imagine that of President Trump as much as I'm capable of imagining the worst about him. I mean, I think he is a genuinely awful person and a psychopath. You know, I would be surprised, again, I think there are yet 3 million more documents that have not been released, and presumably those are being held back for some reason, some strategic reason on the administration's part. So perhaps there's worse to come for Trump, but I would find it difficult to believe or to assume that he's the sort of guy that if you put him on an island and handed him a 13, 14-year-old girl, that's the kind of situation he wants to be in sexually. I don't think that. I think that's a pretty rare person who shared Epstein's proclivities, right? So my assumption about all of this is still, you have a bunch of guys who are eager to, you know, cheat on their wives or to sleep with young, beautiful women who they don't necessarily want to be seen with in public, but these young, beautiful women are not underage for the most part, right? So you have these, and we can be very judgmental about all this behavior, sure, but it still strikes me as extraordinarily unlikely that there are many people who are guilty the way Epstein was of, you know, targeting underage girls, knowingly targeting underage girls. I just think that would be a surprise. And, you know, obviously awful and because how it's so awful, it is worth investigating to the last line of these emails. And by all means, find all these people. But I will be surprised if we find a lot of those people. What will not surprise me is to discover that people like, you know, Donald Trump and Bill Gates and all the other people who are named are happy to find themselves on airplanes or islands or anywhere else with, you know, 20-year-old Russian models who are eager to sleep with them because they're basically functioning like prostitutes and these guys are pigs. That would not surprise me. So, and that's what I'm certainly expecting we're going to find evidence of. And that, in many cases, that's probably embarrassing enough, especially given that many of these guys had relationships with Epstein that were deep enough and long enough such that you can't believe they didn't know what he was into. And I don't believe that Trump was ignorant of Epstein's actual appetites and behavior, because I mean, because we have it from his own mouth where he said, you know, some say he loves beautiful women as much as I do, and you know, his are on the young side or something. Like what the only thing that could mean is that Trump was aware of, because he had Trump's conquests were surely young enough so that when he's talking about the young side, he's talking about what Epstein was actually into. So I think Trump can probably be hung based on the extent of his friendship with Epstein. You know, I trust that could all be forthcoming. But I would be surprised if Trump is the sort of guy who wants to sleep with a 13-year-old. That would surprise me.
Right. I think you're right. The awareness factor, when people knew and what they knew, will come into play.
Yeah.
But there is a difference between what Epstein was doing and piggish behavior.
Yeah, a huge difference. I mean, again, it's not to say that the piggish behavior isn't going to be enough to destroy some reputations, because you have guys who are cheating on their wives, et cetera.
But that's not what this is all about. I mean, that's
but
not.
No, but the thing that it's about, in addition to Epstein's crimes and anyone else who's participating at that level, what it's about is a network of very rich, very connected, in many cases, very smart people, many of whom you have to assume knew about his crimes and tolerated an enduring association with him, you know, under the shadow of that knowledge. And that seems like a kind of culpability that a lot of people are getting hammered for now.
You don't think it's possible that he had two operations going, one that was more secretive for himself?
At the beginning, I suggested that, but I think a lot of people knew. They knew about his earlier conviction. They certainly knew when the big story broke in 2018, and they maintained a friendship with him, and they hung out with him enough to know that, you know, he was into, you know, 14-year-olds or whatever he was into. I mean, so
you really think they knew that, or was some sort of rumor around there, and they hadn't seen it, and they just kind of looked the other way because there was convenience there, and you know.
Again, I do not consider myself especially well informed about. I mean, again, I've not gone down this rabbit hole to know just how many allegations there are and what they're like, and just how plausible it is that it could all have been hidden. I mean, you're talking about people who, you know, some in many cases who went to his island, who went to his ranch in New Mexico, went to his house many times, who were on his plane. If you're imagining that he kept two sets of books sexually so carefully that he just, you know, he always knew to be with a girl 18 or above in the presence of normies, and then, you know, let his pedophile freak flag fly in the presence of other freaks, and he kept all that straight. That seems a little far-fetched to me. I think Trump's statement about he likes him on the young side is absolutely damning.
Right, but just because Trump knew doesn't mean, you know, someone like Bill Gates knew. I mean, I think it's entirely possible that people are on these trips and they didn't see anything. And I mean, just the explanation to me makes more sense that someone like a Bill Gates just maybe heard rumors or it makes sense that he'd be willing to look the other way and just shrug it off to some rumor. I don't think he would have seen it or witnessed it. I just have a hard time believing that he would continue to put himself in this guy's presence if he saw that, if he really knew.
I have a hard time believing that in many, many cases. I don't have a hard time believing that in Trump's case, given
what he said,
what a pig he is. But let's jump to my case now, which I've spoken about on the podcast before, which is I met this man exactly once, as far as I know. It's totally possible I was at some kind of, you know, party or dinner party, you know, at a TED conference, very likely, where he was also in the room. But the only time I'm aware of having met him was at a lunch at TED that had maybe 12 people at it. And I described the immediate impression I got, which was that he was a colossal douchebag, because he had a, you know, very attractive young Asian woman on his knee, kind of bouncing along on his knee, during the whole lunch. And it was pretty clear they weren't newlyweds or newly engaged, or people who just, you know, who were going to spend the rest of their lives together and just couldn't be apart for 10 seconds. I guess there's some perhaps romantic version of this is not invidious. But the scene I saw was of a guy who was with a woman who was at least 30 years younger than him. Zero implication that she was underage. I mean, she seemed like she was probably in her early 20s, but just very young for him. And also, the way he was relating to her, he was as a kind of, you know, accessory. You know, it was just a weird sugar daddy vibe where he thought he was coming off like, you know, Cary Grant, and he was coming off like a total sleazebag. So that was the impression I formed of him. And as far as I knew, that was my only interaction with him ever. And now we discover that he had sent me an email inviting me. I mean, do you want to take it now? Do you want to read that email?
Yeah, let's start with this. So this is what was discovered. Epstein to you, Sam, we met with John Brockman at the TED event. I thought you might enjoy a dinner with Woody Allen, Chomsky, and me. It should be fun. What do you write? Right. By the way, this is May of 2015. What do you write back? Oh my God, you could have been killed for this. You said, only if we film it, smiley face. Yeah. Oh my God, how bad this could have been.
Only
if we film it. Meanwhile, this guy's head must have been... like, he must have been like, how does he know? Does he want in on the cabal? So he writes back, are you ever in New York? You write back, no plans at the moment. I guess then maybe the final one, which this really, I mean, you could have been in trouble had he not exonerated you with this. He said, I just finished your reading your Chomsky email exchange in Arts, I guess, Letters. I now understand your film it comment. I spent quite a lot of time. I mean, do you want me to read the whole thing? But
I mean, you can. I mean, this is so, perhaps before you do, I should just say that this is a humbling encounter with the vagaries of memory for me, because I literally have no memory of this exchange. One would think I would remember. First, let me just say that in my understanding at this point, Epstein was just this billionaire who gave a lot of money to scientists and funded a lot of scientific research. I mean, that was my understanding of who he was. I believe that's all I knew about him until I had lunch with him and just got a vibe that he was a douchebag. Again, that's all I knew about him. And
which makes it plausible to believe that others didn't know that about him at that time. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So, and it's totally understandable to me that there are, you know, scientists by the dozen who would have wanted proximity to him on the chance that their projects could get funded, et cetera. So it's no surprise at all that he had kind of this vast reach within the scientific community, because that seemed to be, you know, what he was into, among other things. But so when I got this email, I certainly would think I would remember this billionaire inviting me to a dinner with Woody Allen and Noam Chomsky. So again, zero memory of that. When I read my response, I immediately understood what I must have meant, which is, okay, you're inviting me to a dinner with Chomsky. the only way I'm walking into that room is if the cameras are rolling, because I had just, I forget when I had it, but I had a war with, an email war with Chomsky. Chomsky is another person who he's considered a saint on the far left. He strikes me as a truly awful human being, just pathological in many ways, but leave that aside. So I had to believe that the only thing I could have meant there was, dude, you're inviting me to dinner with Chomsky. Don't you realize what went down there?
But I just want to clarify, when you're saying that, the furthest you would think he would be complicit would be perhaps in the pig category at best.
I'm not even referring to, I mean, I know he's wrapped up in these emails, and I think he was sending friendly emails to Epstein even like up to the last month of his life or something. I mean, like he was somebody who was relating to him happily until the end, certainly into 2019. But I'm not even imputing anything on that score. I just think Chomsky, as far as I can tell, is just a terrible person. we don't have to do a postmortem on that. I discovered a lot in the aftermath of my brief email entanglement with him, thinking he was sort of a normal academic who could be dealt with normally. He's just got some very weird issues.
So that explains the film it thing. You thought you're going to have a collision if we were going to.
Yeah. So I just thought, you're going to put me in a room with Chomsky, that this is going to be great and also just crazy. But the thing is, I have no memory of this invitation. There's no evidence that I ever took it seriously. I just said, only if we film it. And then I never responded to him again. And then when he responded to that line, well, you're about to read that. But then it seems I never responded to his response. So I just was not interested, apparently.
Well, I don't know that there, I mean, people can read it. I don't know that I need to read the whole thing, but he just basically I spent quite a lot of time with him recently. Odd, but he is warm and funny. In fact, very in both categories. I would suggest that as some age, the energy required to keep separate their views and their person is required elsewhere in the body. So debate is virtually ad hominem, like it or not, more charm, yeah. Unless this guy's, by the way, these emails are not easy to read. There's punctuation all over the place and it's not written. And less argument, I respectfully suggest we will get you your desired engagement. So he's saying more charm and less argument. He's suggesting, he's coaching you.
So I never responded to that. And then the other thing that I discovered online, or actually a friend of Annika's discovered it, is that Annika and I had been invited to a party. I don't know where the party was. Again, no memory of this. And there's just this list, there's like an internal list from Epstein's side of the people who accepted the invitation, the people who were out of town, and the people who declined. And, it's a good list. It looked like a good party. It had, Jack Nicholson and Danny Kahneman and Eric Kandel and lots of interesting people.
They were on the accepted list, or you didn't know what side?
I actually don't know, so don't assume anything there, but you guys can look at this PDF online. But anyway, I was very happy to see that Annika and I had declined rather than just be out of town for that. Again, zero memory of this exchange. So, this is a lesson to note to self. I mean, I'm genuinely surprised to have no memory of exchanges like this that happened not more than 10 years ago or 11 years ago. I mean, that's like, yeah, obviously I get a lot of email and, I respond to a lot of email but still, I would think I would have remembered deciding, okay, I have zero interest in having dinner with, a rando billionaire who I don't know much about, and Woody Allen and Noam Chomsky. I just think I would remember it, but I don't.
Yeah, but I'm not surprised you would pass on something like that. I mean, I was trying to think to myself, if I were invited to that dinner or anybody else I knew to, get access to that Rolodex back in 2014, 15, around that time, to be seated at a dinner table with prime ministers, Nobel laureates, others, I probably would have said yes. I mean, I can't imagine I would have said no. I think everybody would have said, are you kidding me? I'd love to be in that room. I could jumpstart my career. What the insane access. Look at these people, Bill Gates, Musk. I mean, he's around everybody.
Well, it's not like I haven't said yes to anything like this, because like there are obviously people you admire who are famous or doing great things in the world who you love to meet, right? So that, I mean, it's one of the perks of being kind of semi-famous. It's like you get invitations to meet people who you genuinely admire and even want to collaborate with, or so it's there's no reason for people to be totally cynical about this sort of thing. And it's totally understandable, again, that scientists in particular, academics in particular, felt that they couldn't say no to invitations from a deep-pocketed person like this, because, I mean, people don't understand this, but science is so starved for money. I mean, this is one of the deplorable things about the effect that the Templeton Foundation was having on science. I mean, to some degree, it's probably still having that effect. I haven't really tracked it. But the Templeton Foundation, I think, has become more secular in recent years, but it was an overtly religious foundation in the beginning. But it was just like the only game in town with respect to funding scientific conferences. And I mean, so everyone who wasn't kind of in the narrow atheist orbit with me and Richard Dawkins and Dan Dennett and Christopher Hitchens were just pandering to the religious obscurantism of this foundation, setting up conferences that really just kind of split the baby of faith and reason in ways that were totally indefensible, and funding all kinds of projects on things like, you know, forgiveness and free will and like things that I, you know, fine, they should be funded, but people were bending over backwards to just play nice with a religious institution. So science has been starved for funding, and that's just a problem, and people need to be aware of it.
Yeah. All right. Let's get back to the spicy shit. Okay. I do think that, I think Elon also had a shaky memory there. I think before he got his glow up, he had pretended that I think Epstein had invited him a number of times, but he couldn't be bothered.
Right.
Only yeah. to see that he was
yeah, he had
asking,
a slightly different reaction yeah. to the prospect of going to Epstein's and getting into Epstein's world. Yeah, so Elon
well, but
has
before
said,
you say that, it was funny that I just wanted to say that I saw the email where he had reached out saying, hey, one of those parties, and Epstein had staffed it out, like, you know, make this go away.
Yeah. was,
yeah. Well, anyway, what's worse than being on Epstein's Island, you know, being kept from Epstein's Island?
Yeah, no, but worse still, Elon was just very specific. He wanted to make sure he timed it to get to the wildest party that Epstein was throwing in that sequence of wild parties.
Okay, but again, there, I am certain he meant the wild parties, the good wild parties, not...
Well, yeah, but he's not, so there's no necessary implication of knowledge of underage girls, but his interest in being surrounded by hot girls, hot women, was explicit. Epstein got back to him saying, yeah, if you're coming with your wife, Tallulah, she might not like the ratio on my island. And Elon gets back, you know, she got no problem with the ratio. It's like, we want to be around hot girls. Was the explicit communication there.
Which is fine. Again, I only say it because we're talking about Epstein that I'm trying to be so careful yeah. here that right. there has to be a distinction made that with yeah. Elon here is, you know, he's yeah. a lot of things, but I'm not buying it until we see concrete evidence.
Yeah. No, I mean, I have no reason to believe he or much of anyone else would be into the Epstein stuff, really. So,
all right. So comment on that. And then I think we saw he was getting into a fight with Reid Hoffman.
Yeah, I'm not on X, so I've just seen kind of news reports summing up this kind of damage control that Elon is attempting to do on X. But he just strikes me as very dumb in this regard. It's like he's trying to drag, you know, this other billionaire who had a Reid Hoffman, who had a peripheral connection to Epstein for the kind of same stuff that he's culpable for in these files. It seems like a dumb way to go about it. I mean, the thing that's embarrassing is that Elon pretended that he recognized that Epstein was a terrible person and kept him at arm's length. And yet we see from the exchange that he was avidly trying to get on his island. And so it's just like, and, you know, even there, I mean, given my own experience with just an overt failure of memory, I guess it would not surprise me if Elon doesn't remember any of his communication with Jeffrey Epstein. I mean, that's totally possible. So, yeah, I mean, he was probably quite surprised to see that, you know, see what he had written in those emails.
Right. So yeah. I guess in just general, is all this transparency a good thing in the end? Like, for example, Pizzagate was spawned by a data dump like this. What are we brewing up next with all this info coming out? You know, is Mamdani, for example, going to have to trail these conspiracies about Epstein being his father now? I don't know if you saw that picture. Kirby, can we show
no,
Sam the image?
That's a thing?
Yeah, can we show Sam the image of what we're talking about?
Oh my God. There's another conspiracy. I heard that some people think Epstein is alive and well and living like a billionaire in Israel. Have you seen that stuff?
No, but it's always, of course, they're going to find a way. And I'm sure,
yeah, I think that.
I'm sure the Mossad is in there somewhere. Actually, maybe they are. I mean, I don't know enough about that either, but Candace is probably thrilled about that.
This is just idiotic.
It's entirely idiotic. Back to Mamdani on this, looking at the facial structure, you know, the same eyebrows and the nose. Like, if you're Mamdani, you're like, what the fuck am I having to deal with this for? But some of these things stick. So I guess, you know, what do we think is coming with all this info out there? How many new conspiracy theories aside from this one?
Well, I think given where we are and what has happened, I think a complete release of these files again, with whatever necessary attention there is to the reputations of the victims, right? So, I mean, like, I think the victims' names should be, and other information should be carefully blacked out if that's in fact what they want, right? So, and I think there's been some reckless release of personal information on that front too. So, you know, the DOJ appears to be fucking this up in all kinds of ways. But given where we are, I think we want everything released because no one should trust the Trump administration and their motives at this. The other amazing piece of video you sent me was the Nick Fuentes reaction to this, which, you know, again,
great.
He's just a snarling little Nazi who I have nothing but contempt for. But I recognize that he is a very talented broadcaster, as is Candace Owens. But in this piece, he just, you know, expresses his absolute outrage at being lied to on this front. It's like, you mean to tell me that this Trump had Thanksgiving dinner with Jeffrey Epstein, you know, his first Thanksgiving dinner as president? And it's just a great piece of video that someone cut together.
Well, the music is fantastic.
The background music is great, but he conveys his seething anger in a very entertaining way. It's very funny, and unfortunately, because he's again a Nazi. But yeah, it's great to see people on the far right losing their patience with the obvious deception coming from the Trump administration on this. I mean, they said there's nothing there; it's a Democrat hoax, and then, you know, we got a ton of stuff on Trump, and they're holding back 3 million more documents.
Right, right. Well, I saw Marjorie Taylor Greene, who, again, seems to have gone from Jewish space lasers to becoming a beacon of morality on the right. She's been making way too much sense, and she's pissed about this. I also saw a podcaster named Sean Ryan. I don't really know much about him, but...
Yeah, he's MAGA.
But he had a clip that was pretty great about his feeling so betrayed by the administration. I guess he had had Trump and J.D. Vance on in advance. Right. Feeling betrayed. I haven't seen his show.
I voted to get these damn files released, and it's like a total 180 just happened. Why is the White House protecting pedophiles?
And then I saw Andrew Schultz has been out there siding with the left right now, and then it seems like Rogan even is pulling back a bit. So maybe more and more people are defecting. I still think that most in MAGA are either too silent on this or still supporting, but we'll have to see.
Yeah, but I do hope it all comes out. I think it probably will all come out. I think there are just enough people right of center who care about this, you know, both for good and bad reasons. I mean, the conspiracy nuts care about it for bad reasons, but, you know, who knows how much of a conspiracy there is actually here to find. I mean, I think we should find it. I mean, it's definitely a conspiracy of enablement and silence, and so.
You think the Trump stuff, I mean, I saw a little, again, I also haven't spent much time here. Some of that, those claims were just so big. Something about him having a child killed or something. And I mean, did you see that?
Yeah, I mean, some of the, it does not. It's not at all helpful that some of these allegations seem just totally bonkers. That, like, even believing the worst about these people, it's impossible to believe some of them. Again, I have not done a deep dive on it, but I did see something like that where it's just, yeah, several murders were being alleged.
All right, let me shift to another topic, and we can. We can go back to Epstein if you want to.
No, I think until more emails leak, I hope I'm done.
Yeah, well, yeah. We would have been better prepared for this show, but we did this last minute since you canceled. We thought, we had to cancel the shows. We thought, all right, maybe we'll try to do something, make it up with a podcast and cover some ground. But it seems the New York Times and others are worried that Newsom will become the Democratic nominee in 2028. Now, I've been saying this for a long time, not because I want him to be, but I don't think there's any way he's going to step aside for anybody else.
Hmm.
What do you think?
Well, I mean, obviously the Democratic Party gets a vote here. It definitely worries me. I mean, I see what is attractive about him as a candidate, you know, the way he looks, the way he debates, the way he talks. I mean, he's fast on his feet. If you hit him with, you know, all the reasons why California is an albatross, he'll hit you with the 15 things you didn't know about California that make it a feather in his cap. But I just think it is, for many, many reasons, what the Democrats need is obviously the strongest possible candidate. And for reasons both intrinsic to him and his past, and for reasons that have nothing to do with him in principle, but have everything to do with the nationwide perception and misperception of California, I don't see Gavin being that candidate.
Right, but we're not seeing him, regardless of who else gets a vote, we're not seeing him say something to the effect of, look, I'm unelectable, it's not going to happen, let me go out
and
signal boost somebody. I'm going to go find somebody great. He's not doing that. It's not. No, why do you think he's going to do it later?
There's still a lot of time yet. I mean, it's just, it's going to be, he's not, I mean, he's had to run in California, right? And he's had to pander to very progressive causes. And there's a lot of, you know, kind of policy skeletons in his closet that when aired in campaign ads and Oppo research, again, forget about just embarrassing stuff like the, you know, the French Laundry moment, but just.
French Laundry? That's not even in the top 10, Sam.
Yeah. But I mean, just like, the, you know, forget about obvious missteps. I mean, just what it took for him to do politics in California is not going to age well on the national stage. So I worry about all that. Again, he might be the candidate and he might win. Who knows? I mean, he's running against J.D. Vance, who is unattractive in all kinds of ways. You know, maybe Gavin could win easily. I have no idea. But I'm at this distance from 2028, I would be very worried if kind of the center of gravity suddenly became, it's going to be Gavin.
Well, I'm still betting on the fact that he's a star. He's incredibly talented. He knows it. And I don't see him stepping aside. It's not going to happen. Speaking of stars, did you happen to catch any of the Grammys? That's the music one,
yes,
Sam.
Yes. I caught a little bit. Yeah, with my daughters wanted to watch it. So I watched more than I wanted of the Grammys. Yeah.
They watched the Billie Eilish acceptance speech where she...
No, I actually didn't see that.
Yeah. Oh, she said something about there are no illegals on stolen land. You can't be illegal on stolen land.
And as grateful as I feel, I honestly don't feel like I need to say anything, but that no one is illegal on stolen land.
And then I had seen somebody, I saw somebody post online that they were on their way to California to move into our house because it couldn't be illegal there. I guess my question here in general is, I guess, you know, what do you think in particular of something like this and then celebrities in general using their platforms or these platforms for political statements? Obviously, we know our friend Ricky Gervais does not like it, but is there a place where you think it's okay and where it's not?
Well, I think there are places where it's irresistible. You know, there are causes where it's so top of mind for everybody. It's like, you know, it's embarrassing to even be at an award ceremony in the first place, given what's happening in the world. So you feel like you have to say something. So I understand that. And I also understand how little patience there is for it when you're not in the absolute center of that bullseye, right? So everyone has a very short fuse around it when it's not their cause or when it's, you know, when we've heard too much about it or people are not hitting it exactly right or what is perceived to be right, et cetera. So, I mean, I don't know if it's, I think we're probably past the days where, what was it? What's the story? Like John Wayne was going to beat up somebody at the Oscars.
I just watched it. I think it was 1975. I think Frank Sinatra was pissed. That was the first time. I forget his name. I literally was just watching this.
Yeah, yeah. Somebody.
The old guard and the new guard. It was the director of Easy Rider, I think.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he was sort of this new hippie.
Yeah, right. He said something.
He apologized.
I forget what cause it was, whether it was Native Americans. Well, but I also think, Clint Eastwood took a very critical line against the fake Native American girl who accepted Marlon Brando's award that year. She turns out that the one who came up in full Native American dress turns out not to have had a Native American bone in her body. I think she was Latina. But yeah, so anyway, I think we're not in that moment, but I understand that it's not generally frowned upon for a reason.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're also all sort of guilty of not liking it when they say something that we don't like and, you know, cheering it on when they say something we do like. Last episode, we touched on AI replacing jobs. Apparently, there were some plugins that were just released by Anthropic that caused quite a sell-off in the markets today. Everything seems to be coming faster and faster now. And we, you know, I guess, what are we headed for and how are you navigating this? And don't tell me again that we're going to die because until that happens... I mean, it just seems that things are, this is a new thing. I think many jobs are going to be gone. I mean, I don't know how many jobs will be gone come March 1st at this point.
Yeah, so I haven't heard this story about Anthropic that you're referring to, so I don't know what that's about, but.
Just imagine now solutions are end-to-end, agents are doing things, you don't need to ask your employees to get you something.
The idea that this isn't job canceling at bottom, right, that this is analogous to any other revolution in the past where, you know, agriculture to manufacturing to service, that strikes me as clearly delusional, right? Like this is the final invention on some level. Now, it's not clear that LLMs are going to get us there, right? So it's totally possible that this is all going to peter out in a surprising way very soon. And we're going to recognize that we need some fundamental breakthrough at the algorithmic level or some other level where to get to true AGI and true job canceling tech. But even at this level, it seems like it's putting lots of jobs in peril. And in the limit, it clearly cancels the need for human cognition almost across the board. I mean, and the almost is only preserved by those things where we retain a sentimental attachment for the human provenance of specific products, right? So if we care that the music was made by apes like ourselves, then there'll be some careers in music for people who still play music, albeit not as well as the robots. And so it is with novels and, you know, podcasts or anything else. But the idea that we're not eventually going to get to a place where everything has become like chess, which is to say the machines are just better than we are at that very thing that we have cared so much about for thousands of years. I mean, we're getting there. It's just a matter of time. And the question is just how much time and whether we're going to break something else along the way or whether the ushering in of AGI is going to be synonymous with some other terrible outcome that makes worrying about jobs seem like a very high class problem.
Yeah, well, I think we will be able to put human made on this podcast, at least for a while.
Yes.
We're working on a replacement for you quickly, but it's unfortunately not here yet, but we'll get that LLM, that Sam LLM out here. Quickly, did you see that my man Don Lemon was arrested? I want to talk quickly about that.
I did see that. Yeah. I think I'm talking to him pretty soon on his podcast, so it'll be interesting.
This feels like a slippery slope.
That was a scary moment. I mean, I didn't pay as much attention as perhaps I should have to the reaction right of center, but I mean, it was just obviously an illegitimate arrest. And it was, I think, treated as such. I mean, happily, it was treated as such by the courts. But I don't know what has followed from that. I mean, like, I don't know if it cost him, you know, $100 to deal with the outcome there, or if it's actually been a major hassle financially to deal with being prosecuted in this way. I mean, but that's clearly the point.
I'm sure it's a financial hassle, but I'm sure he'll gain. I mean, if I were managing him, I'd be like, this is great. I mean, he's going to be a household name. He's going to have a precedented case. I mean, I think he could. I mean, if this goes, the fact that this is a gray area. I mean, he's there as a journalist, but, you know, journalists today are kind of sort of activists too. And it's hard to know what side. I mean, most journalists are there covering one side. So you could make the claim that I don't think he was there trying to, you know, make sure the churchgoers were okay with these protesters. He was trying to, you know, catch reactions. And
yeah, but I mean, there traditionally has been a very wide berth for the presence of journalists in chaotic situations. And it's like the fact that you're holding the camera and you've got press credentials. I mean, that has eroded, I guess, because everyone on some level, you know, with a iPhone and a YouTube account can claim to be a journalist now. But I mean, it's just so obvious that he was not someone who was disturbing the peace. He was covering what was happening. And yeah, I mean, just based on, you know, his reputation as a journalist, you can know that about him. I mean, on some level, he should have been protected by his history as, you know, being in mainstream journalism.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I just think that if we go after him, it's going to be a slippery slope, but they should be protected anyway. All right, well, I'm looking forward to you being on Don's podcast, and you'll have to let him know that I'm a big fan of his. Okay, I have to jump back to the Epstein files. So for all those who stopped listening because they were listening just for the Epstein files, we're back. I saw this tweet. There's an email from Chomsky, your best friend, giving advice to Epstein in 2019 on how to beat the allegations. Did you see that? Mm.
Yeah, yeah. So that's when I said that he was corresponding with Epstein up until the last year of his life. That's why I believe that. I saw that email at some point.
Okay, you didn't say that. You just said they were, maybe earlier, I just thought you were making a claim that, you know, he's not a good person, but he stuck around.
No, I mean, he clearly knew about the full scope of the scandal because that broke in 2018 with the Miami Herald investigation. And I mean, again, this, I have not done a deep dive on this. I've seen like two emails and I think they're, we'll see some thousands with Chomsky or naming Chomsky. But No, if Chomsky's writing him that email in 2019 about how to do reputational, you know, crisis communications, or you know, not communicate as the case may be. I mean, his advice was basically say nothing. He knew what Epstein was, you know, had done and what he was into. I mean, and again, just to be clear, the aspersions I cast on Chomsky as an awful person have nothing to do with his sexual interests or his entanglement with Epstein, or he's just obviously, in my experience, not a good guy, and I'll leave it at that.
All right. Well, sorry, I had to bring back the juice. Yeah. All right, now it's time for the lightning round. It's going to be a short one. Again, I said I didn't have enough time to prepare since we threw this together quickly, but what do you read or watch or do that makes you laugh? Like, not ironic laughter, but just full out laughter. What just makes you just giggle? Do you ever have like those moments where you're just laughing so hard? Actually, I've seen you have those.
Yeah.
So I know.
I'm just trying to think what I saw recently that was so funny.
Didn't you say you're talking about somebody who'd written something that was just really funny. Ari, that's his name. Did he write something you thought was really, I don't know if it laugh out loud funny.
Oh, no. Well, yeah, we talked about it. I don't think people are going to find it that funny, but I laughed at Eddington, the film a lot, the Ari Asher film. Boy, we spoke about that on a previous podcast.
So just movies or reading books, or does that mean, is there anything, like, what do you, I mean, just.
You know, over the course of watching stuff with my girls or with Annika, I'm often watching things that we're laughing at as much as we're laughing with, you know? So, I mean, there's intentionally funny things, and then there's the unintentional comedy of a lot of the stuff they point their attention to. So, but I
remember you once telling a story about going back and watching Star Wars with, I think it was your oldest daughter, and just thinking, oh my God, this is just terrible. And it just didn't hold up. I don't know if you guys were laughing at that.
Well, I'm amazed at how badly some things have aged, and how the things I know I've found totally impeccable at their ages, you know, they watch and they immediately recognize, okay, this is cheesy on all kinds of levels, or like, I mean, it's everything from the, you know, the special effects being bad, but to just the writing's bad, the acting's bad, this is just not good. And so on some level, they're more, it's not across the board, but on some level, they're much more sophisticated consumers of media than I realized, and certainly than I was. So it's always, there's some great embarrassment when you download a movie that you think is really gonna land perfectly, and it totally misfires. I've had a bunch of those. But strangely, things that are quite old and, you know, obviously dated survive really well. I mean, they love old movies. They love Hitchcock. You know, so like, especially my youngest daughter, we watch Hitchcock all the time. And so why that works, but like Raiders of the Lost Ark doesn't work for her. I mean, I still can't figure that out. But she'll watch Vertigo for the 10th time, but Raiders of the Lost Ark in the first 8 minutes was boring. You know, with the giant rock, you know, yeah, you know, rolling down on him the Mayan tomb or whatever it was. So it's, yeah, I don't understand it, but I've much fun has been had at my expense for having liked those things.
I've been doing something kind of related. I mean, somewhat related, maybe. I've made content much better this year. It's the first time in a long time I've been watching Netflix and other streamers without my phone. And the content is much better. It's actually, everything's more enjoyable.
Without your phone?
Without any distraction. I'm actually just giving it my full attention, and the content is better. So I'm going to keep doing that.
Yeah. Who would have thought that you actually have to have your eyes pointed at the screen to enjoy a movie?
Yeah, exactly. Didn't know that. All right. Well, thanks again to everyone who submitted questions. As always, if you'd like to help with this show in the future, you can head over to Sam's page on Substack and submit questions and participate in the online community. And again, you can get tickets to see Sam live by going to samharris.org. And lastly, one more time, sorry again to all those in Dallas and Austin. We look forward to seeing you in May. That's it for this episode. Thanks for tuning in. I don't know when the next one will be, but I don't know. It could be tomorrow.
Yeah. Yep. Thanks, everybody.